How do you do? Welcome to the lively art of conversation on Cups Show, the talk of television. I'm Irv Cupsinet, your host. And among the lively ones talking today will be Godfrey Cambridge, the entertainer and actor, Sonny and Cher, the delightful husband and wife singing team, Werner Klemperer, Colonel Klink of Hogan's Heroes, Ira Levin, who wrote the bestseller Rosemary's Baby and now has a new book called This Perfect Day, and Felice Gordon, a former theatrical agent who's turned author. Her book is called The Pleasure Principle. Welcome, one and all.
Thank you.
Sonny and Cher, so nice to see you, folks. It's been a long time since we've had a chance to chat and visit with you. Tell me, have Sonny and Cher changed their image? You were among the first to rebel against the clothes you wore, the way out clothing at one time. Now you're more establishment, I would say, in your dress on stage. Your music has changed a little bit away from rock and roll.
Probably. Externally, you would say yes, there's a positive change. Internally, probably no, none whatsoever. I think the whole point, like we were talking before backstage, was to try and bring everybody back together. There seems to be like a positive separation of old and young. That's all, you know, when you either work for the old or you work for the young. And hopefully, if we're successful, I would like to just forget how old somebody is in an audience. Have them forget that my hair is long and now I can work in a tuxedo if I want to. So I think the clothes were required then. I think you needed that at that time. You don't now. Now you can go with what's inside you. And now I think if you just put the clothes on as a uniform, that you're watering it down and it doesn't belong anymore. So from that respect, we've discarded that exterior kind of a thing, and hopefully people can get inside of us now, you know. But when we started, there were no hippies, there were no Beatles, there wasn't anything, and to break through was not so much a nonconformity, but individuality or freshness or something, because everything was formatted at that time.
Well, you were the first to go that way. Now perhaps you're setting a trend coming back the other way.
If I set any trend now, I would like to set no trend and say that everybody can entertain and you don't have to be a specific type of entertainer. You shouldn't. I don't think an entertainer should gear his show for a certain age bracket. I think you should just eliminate age. You should entertain, period, young, old, whatever.
Well, you know? Frank Sinatra achieved that, didn't he? He appeals to the young and old. And he
I think any good entertainer does, really.
Yes,
I think so.
But he'll never be much.
He'll never make it, but other than that.
On a more serious note, Sonny, the last time we really had a chat was at the 1948 Democratic Convention. And I bring it up because what's happening in the world today is really relevant to what you said way back there at the convention in 1968. You made a speech on behalf of the young people being involved in the political process, and you pleaded with the Democrats to do something about this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if anything came about it, but certainly you were echoing what is being said, or you were saying what is being echoed today around the campuses.
I got a plank in the platform, that in the Democratic platform, it did finally go through, where they were going to institute a youth commission, which would kind of make the young people feel involved. And I was hoping that it would eliminate the frustration that exists between the two factions. And it went in, and it got through, and I think the thing that disturbed me the most is after it went in, and I had it in black and white, then I went down to the park and said, here it is, see, you can do it through the system, just go that way. And that was rejected from the other end too, and I was totally confused after that point. And I said, the best thing I can do is just do what I do well and hope somebody will go from there, you know?
These are really disturbing times, Ira. I presume you are deeply concerned as everybody else. Your book certainly gives us an answer. We'll have a whole computerized society. We won't have to worry about making decisions.
Well, I think we'll have other things to worry about, though. I think when we have to stop worrying about our own decisions, then it's a question of who's making the decisions for us. And I think the big danger today is looking for some kind of answer that's going to take the whole load off our shoulders. Because I think, you know, life has always had its problems, and we've got to accept the fact that problems are part of life and not hope for any freedom from them. Because,
you know what's so interesting? I just want to throw my word in here because I'm terribly disturbed too about the last few weeks. You know what seems to be so difficult is that we, and I talk about myself being a little older than the younger people, we seem to have a great deal of problems being able to say we might be wrong in some of our thinking. We have a reluctance to say that.
Well, everybody has. Nobody will admit he's wrong until he's proved wrong, really. And
that's so difficult, you know, like, because if we could just, you know, it just takes so little, to, you know. And
yes, and that seems like such a hard thing for somebody to say.
Very big mountain to climb.
I might be wrong, but it's like somebody lifts a weight.
Because I think that's all the young people really, they kind of like to hear.
Right.
The possibility exists that they have something to say, nothing else.
But I don't think they'll ever believe it until they've proved it, really.
Well, it's kind of magic.
Every idea sort of makes its own way and has to win its way. And, you know, I think the young people are winning today. I don't think there's any doubt about it.
Yeah, well, I tell you,
it can't be easy. You know, I think if the administration turned around and said, okay, we're going to do everything you ask, there would still be this pressure to express something.
But you see, the administration is terribly reluctant. If I were to put myself as the administration, I have a 10-year-old son, and this happened very recently. It was devastating to me because I was certainly at fault. There was a situation in which he did something that I had to explain to him, and I was totally reluctant to really sort of come towards him, and I was being very abrupt and, you know, sort of single-minded my own way. And he looked at me, and he's 10 years old, and he says, "Look, that just isn't good enough for me." You know, and that's really what it's all about. It isn't good enough anymore.
I think because there's been such a great difficulty in solving the problems that what has happened is we have many older people who actually hate the young. They hate the young because the young ask them for change and ask them for answers or to work on answers, and they really get to hate. I remember sitting at home in California once, I had a house there, and I sat there, and it was a late night show, and the man who shall remain nameless was sitting on the show, on a panel show, and the hatred that he had for this young man who had long hair, but was a Harvard lawyer graduate, and who represented a lot of rock groups, you know, who got busted or in trouble or what have you, and the hatred, I almost felt uncomfortable to watch his close-ups. They would cut away while this kid was talking, to watch his close-ups on that show. It was painful for me to watch, to see that complete blind hatred, you know. And then the news went off, and I found out that a member of his family had committed suicide. And I said, isn't it a pity? Maybe if there wasn't so much hatred of that young, maybe they might have talked. And I wasn't related or anything, but just the vibrations I got. I think there is a hatred of the young because they ask questions. They say, you've done it your way and it's wrong, babe. It's not working. And that hatred comes because of reluctance to change and the reluctance to even look for the answers.
I wonder if it's just hatred, or if it isn't a little bit of hatred of yourself, because you've had the problem of not being able to cope, not being willing to cope,
uh-huh.
You know, in other words, the establishment
the
would like to keep on living a kind of a lie and a kind of a really, truly phony existence. You know
I think this is true of every older generation. They'd sort of like to keep things going, and it's always the younger who have to exert a pressure, and then the younger generation becomes an older generation. They'll turn right around
and
take the same attitude.
But in all the revolutions
that's what's happening to us,
yes, but in all the revolutions we've had through the history, I think, basically, it has been mostly political, it has been economical, it has been industrial. Today, it's very emotional. I mean, it has much to do with your whole inner being.
I think
that's
probably always been true.
Well,
don't you think that, you know, people who were involved in an industrial revolution 75 years ago had their emotions involved in it, too?
Yes, it's all emotion. So. When you're dealing in emotions, it's difficult to become very logical. And right now, we're in such an emotional state that nobody is really very logical at all. I think logic is getting more and more discarded. But I can't now dump everything on the old people. You know, I have to say the same hypocrisy and bigotry exists with the other faction as much as the other faction. I mean, I'll see a guy who, in a naive way, will try to dress contemporarily, and the kids will kind of scoff at him because he doesn't know how, and they don't say, this is how you do it, but you're trying, you know. So there's both factions are still definitely, they just have a chip on their shoulder, and nobody seems to want to get out of an emotional state and get into a logical state.
There's a kind of intolerance that I found even in colleges where when you say a line, before you finish the line, say if the line has FBI in it or ROTC, before you finish the line, you hear cheers and boos and hisses.
Exactly.
And I said, folks, since we're going
to
work that way, let me finish the line,
right,
and then we'll vote on it.
Yeah,
you
right.
know? And a simple majority will take it. You know, because you say, wait a minute, dummy, let's find out whether I'm pro, con, or what the line is all about. You know, but there's that, to the battlements, you know. And it becomes rather discouraging.
But
exactly.
Also, I mean, when kids
go ahead, son.
Do stuff like that, they're not kids anymore. I mean, what, if someone can cause destruction of a bank like they did in Santa Barbara, and when they can tear down a whole town like in Kent, you can hide under the guise of being a kid. Or you can stand up because you're not a kid anymore when you can destroy a whole place. When you're in college, I don't think you're a kid anymore.
Well,
you're screaming for equal rights
no
on one hand and then wanting to
there's
hide
no
behind
being a kid.
There's
no question that there is a fringe number that are dedicated to violence, and they do have
there's
a great effect
if,
on the
there's
campus.
There's some if it were settled today.
Fortunately, they are
unhappy.
A small group.
There's
and you must recognize the fact that the great majority of the students who are protesting are not violent.
Right. But
they are dedicating to legitimate protest.
But
then the question is, how do you combat violence without being violent? That's really what it comes to. How do you do that? That's very difficult.
Well,
you've got to use force against
violence. Right now, we're in a...
shooting.
No.
We're not killing.
It's going to happen, though. We are going into a confrontation. We have to. The direction is inevitable. With violence, you're going to get violence.
When you talk about television news, there were two pictures that are indelibly ensconced in my mind for the last year or two, I guess it was. One was in Vietnam, I think it was during Tet, when General Van Loan, one of the people we support, we all support the best people, executed a Viet Cong by putting a pistol to his head and shooting him.
You mean that famous shot?
And then they went to a commercial. That is indelible to me. The other one was in Chicago. I was in New York, and it was the last shot of the evening, and I saw a white, middle-class, suburban lady in a Chevy automobile who was trying to pick up some kids. And I saw the guards with them saying, go ahead, move, lady. And they were going to stab her ties with bayonets. And they said, go ahead, move. And they were going to put an M79 grenade launcher. They had it right in her window, right in her window. You know how big that thing looks. They said, go ahead, move, lady. And then they just said, that's it, good night.
But they had no ammunition then, though.
Well, but you look at that, and you know that's
frightening enough.
That lady isn't around at M79. Yeah. Plus, the kids started saying, lady, you're being gassed. You know, I just looked at that, and I thought, And they tell me I'm crazy to keep my passport handy. I found that one thing, though.
That's a good idea.
People misinterpret when I say keep my passport handy. I just got back from a 12,000-mile trip, because I do that. I just got to clear my head and I disappear. And I found out there's no hiding place.
No.
No matter where you go.
Yeah, of course.
I went to Sweden, you know, where I'm supposedly better than white. You know, because it's like, oh, black, oh. Wonderful. But they have their own little problems because, you know, I'm sitting there in the plane and a guy says to me, you like here, I have been to Alabama. I said, well, that's nice, beautiful. I haven't, but good for you, you know. And he says, but you would like Sweden. It is a nice country here. He said, of course, we have the Lapps. And I said, what about the Lapps? He said, well, they don't work, they're shiftless. And they run around quite a bit, you know. And I said, you got the Lapps, right. And then he said, of course, we have a gypsy problem here. You know, and you just sit there and you say,
Yeah. I just think 100 miles north of Stockholm, and they're talking about the lamps and the ditches. There ain't nothing up there but snow. And I stood out, man, facing, you know. So, like, you go to Italy, it's the gypsies, or it's the Sicilians, you know.
It's nothing new that we're all prejudiced people, and I include everybody at this table, because it happens to be a human failing, and that's the way it is. But right now, I think the whole world is looking at the United States, and again, we are failing. I really mean
that. We were perfect, we have the solution.
We have to do better than this. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying it's all terrible, but I just say we must do better.
We always said that we had the solutions, or we were the good guys, and all of a sudden it comes out we're not the good guys. We have CIA people who drop in and work for Air America. And,
we have a lot less violence in England because the police do not carry guns.
They're
Nobody
thinking of getting
guns.
Them, though. I've read about that.
Yeah, but the police carry guns. They're issued guns on special missions.
Only on special missions.
Yeah, but they're thinking of
getting
them.
Now they're using guns more and more.
Yeah, I think they're going to carry them in the next year.
If these things
which I think
are human failings, which I agree with, I mean, why should it be incumbent upon us to be superhuman, really? Why can't we accept?
I'm afraid that we have for a long time America has put itself in that position on every political and international issue.
Press agents have done
now if we've done that, if we have that kind of pretense, if you are terribly pretentious, then you have to come through. You have to put up a shut up, otherwise don't have any pretense.
Right.
You see? That's the problem.
I wonder, Cher and Sonny, if the music that the young people are singing today contributes to the unrest on the campuses.
Definitely.
I think so.
Definitely.
I think especially today, because when we started out, not saying that it was a better time, but I think it was because we weren't singing anything for the society or the establishment, but we weren't singing anything against it. We were just saying, let us do what we want to do. Now everything is against everything. A song has to be written against something.
It was
not for the joy of just singing a song.
And with the innuendo or the out-and-out blue material.
It was a great influence on drugs. Music was a great, great influence on drugs. And what people don't realize is that we controlled 24 hours of the radio. Now, any country would consider that a powerful propaganda element?
Weapon.
Yes, yeah, weapon.
It was a natural
development. Now, we had 24 hours a day on almost every major station to say whatever we want, and we were saying it, and then it lost us and got into the hands of the next ones to come by. And
I think it could have been helped. I mean, the people, like, we went out for drugs, which hurt us with the young people.
We went out
people.
Against
I mean,
drugs.
You were against
them,
the use
right.
of marijuana.
But,
and
I mean,
so
we
forth.
Went out and said something against drugs.
At that time, it was
now,
detrimental
to your
career.
Now, the Beatles came out and said something for drugs, at which skyrocketed the sale
Lucy
of drugs.
Lucy went sky with diamonds.
And when you're against drugs, it really puts you into the establishment.
Yeah.
Right away.
You know, the use of music is so important. A lot of people put it down, but the influence it has on the kids today is tremendous, and it ties the young people around the world together, because these songs are being played all over the world.
Nobody understands how powerful that is.
Let me ask you a question, because you're totally involved. Oh, I'm so sorry.
I'm sorry, I just wanted to say, I saw Woodstock, and that proves that what power it has.
Is it?
Half a million kids together.
It has been incredible.
Not yet.
Half a million young people.
Is it not true that the new music, which I happen to be crazy about because it means something, is it not true that that is the actual beginning of this whole revolution? That's
think
the
so,
first
yeah.
outcry.
I
That's
think
the first
if,
statement.
If I back it up, people say, what do you think of so-and-so, and what do you think of so-and-so, and this group and that group? And trying to not be egotistical about it, by their supposed prolific statements, I say they haven't said anything we didn't say. Not just us, Dylan, everybody at that one point when we sort of liberated music 7 years ago, there was a big surge of new music. And like Cher said, it wasn't against anything. It was just... Let us open up a little. Let us expand. You know, I wrote a song called "Laugh at Me," because I was literally threatened.
If you don't like the clothes I'm wearing, that's the price
right.
I'll pay. If you
right, I was literally threatened to be beat up by a 7-foot giant because I had the audacity to walk in a restaurant, say dressed like this, and my hair was shorter than this. Now this man just had to impress somebody. So I was saying, well, I'm going to be this. And now it got to be a matter of principle. I said, well, damn it, then I'm going to wear these clothes and go ahead and try. And again, with the young kids, I think they've got a chip on their shoulder now because somebody clarified that. Now, if you wear clothes just as an irritant factor, I think that's unhealthy. If you wear what you want to because that suits you and that is you, and it belongs to you, fine, but because that door is open now. But now if you use that just to flaunt.
You know, your point is so marvelous because when the whole thing started, I made the typical mistake. I got involved in everything that was new, but I didn't quite understand it. Mm-hmm. I ran out and bought all those clothes, and I wore them.
Did you
and it was the funniest thing I've ever done in my life, because as I got to know better what it was really about, I said, that's not
it didn't
what
belong
I should wear,
to you,
and
right,
I threw
right,
them all away.
Right.
Well, enough. Did you
exactly,
let your hair grow?
No.
We must say goodbye now, but we'll be back tomorrow with some more lively conversation on Cups Show.